Welcome back to another episode of Schneps Connects. Today, I will be discussing a very critical aspect of our city, which is transportation. Taxis, subways, trains, rideshare, ferries, buses, we really have it all. But how do they function and how can they operate more efficiently? Here to discuss the city's transportation systems with me is Matt Doss, partner and transportation practice chair and founder at Windles Marks LLP. Having held other positions such as NYC Taxi and Limousine Commissioner, President of the International Association of Transportation Regulators, and Transportation Technology Chair at CUNY, Matt has a wealth of experience and knowledge about the past, present, and future of transportation here in New York. He's here to talk to us through the impact of current legislation on the mobility industry, upcoming transportation projects throughout the city, and increasing accessibility and a whole lot more. So Matt, thanks so much for being here and really appreciate your time.
My pleasure. Thanks for doing this. And the AM New York Legal publication is great. So I've been honored and privileged to write a bunch of columns throughout the year. So thank you for that. And we hope to keep that going because there seems to be a lot of attention on mobility. We're going through a revolution and an evolution at the same time. And this is a great time to be alive when it comes to mobility innovation. We haven't had, you know, this type of activity, technology and multimodalism and changes since really the creation of the car. We're going in a different direction, of course, but it's really a privilege to be here.
Well, listen, I feel like walking down city streets, you have to look right, left, up, down, all around based on different types of modes of transportation. Particularly,
you got to watch out for those tourists. They have sharp elbows, right?
That's
true, too. Some people even proposed having a separate lane on the sidewalks for the tourists, but that might be a bridge too far.
Tell me a little bit about how you got into the mobility industry. Obviously, at Windles Marks and, you know, your background with the Taxi and Limousine Commission. And how'd you fit into this particular niche?
I totally fell into it. I had, when I was growing up, you know, like everybody, every kid I had a train set, no interest in transportation, really. I'm actually a musician, almost made it big, you know, went to pianist and the guitarist. And when I didn't get signed by a record label, reality set in, I went to law school, came out, did some different things, including civil rights law, insurance and litigation, and then ended up, you know, just by happenstance, working for the lady who became the taxi commissioner, and I followed her, and that's how I got into it. The name of my first band was called Third Rail. Thinking back, you know, that was the only link to transportation that I had. It was my band from high school and college that, you know, played Lamores and were out in the scene. I had long hair, spandex, all that stuff. Now I'm a more well-trimmed citizen, wearing suits and stuff like that. But yeah, it was an evolution. I really just followed people that I like to work for. And I became general counsel of TLC. I first, you know, ran the court system, fixed that up when I was there working for Diane McKechnie. And then, you know, right after 9/11, I got promoted to commissioner and I stayed for Bloomberg's first two terms. I left for the third term 15 years ago, opened up shop here, worked as a distinguished lecturer at CUNY. And I started expanding my wings into other mobility modes because remember, I was only taxi. TLC is a very tough job. Don't underestimate the media influence it has. You know, I dealt with the press like every day, you know, as much as the police and the fire commissioner, because cabs are on the street. There's stories happening in real time. I was on TV once a week in the print media, you know, three times a week. It was really very political. Everybody that we regulate, they all fight with each other because they have different slices of the industry. It's like peeling an onion. So coming out of that world, you're living in that world for all these years. And then we don't interact and or didn't interact enough as we should have because of governance issues with public transit and with street design. And now these new mobilities that have occurred since Uber. Like I left TLC and started my practice before Uber was created. You know, so I was there during the glory days when we not only corrected all the safety issues that New Yorkers were had in the 90s, but also putting hybrids on the road, putting the technology in the cabs. That was all under my administration. So when I left, we just continued, you know, starting to represent at my law firm, you know, companies that we were used to representing and know a lot about, like limousines and non-emergency medical transit and taxis and so forth. And then when Uber really started the app revolution, that's when a lot of the private equity money started going into transportation for the first time ever, really. I mean, money was always spent from public funds for transit and so forth. For the first time, private equity people in Silicon Valley saw the data map that's created. You know, that was one of the original reasons why, like Jeff Bezos and others got involved in investing in Uber and Lyft and some of those entities. They were looking at the use of the phone and transportation to get data. Now there's data everywhere. And there's other things that they look at, like, you know, like logistics, using the apps and the technology to deliver goods, especially mm-hmm. during a pandemic. So that the whole world was blown open like that. Then you had the e-bikes and the scooters and now flying taxis and automated vehicles. It's really amazing what's happening. So it's a great time to be alive if you're a mobility or a transportation wonk, but I just kind of fell into it. So on a daily basis, I practice law representing, you know, governments and all types of mobility companies that deliver people and goods all over the country and do consulting all over the world. I also teach and lecture, you know, and do a lot of reports and research. You know, we did a report on the airport of the future, JFK redevelopment. We did one on the insurance crisis in New York, which had led to the reduction in insurance to give more money back to drivers and to deal with a problem that was created actually when I was working for the city, when the no fault was increased. So I've kind of seen it all and we just keep going.
Listen, part of it is probably about timing too, that you came from, you know, the public sector to the private sector, right at a time when the industry was going to change dramatically.
Yeah. And it's nice to know that, you know, myself and my clients and the people that I've networked with over the last 15 years, that they're all part of it. And it's a great community and there's a lot of talent coming into it. Like when I was there, there was a very small niche group of people that would come and work in transportation. They usually come out of engineering and planning schools. Now people want to be taxi regulators. It used to be a job that people used to get when I back in the day because they were being punished for something. You know, they'd be transferred from another department because they did something wrong. And they're, okay, you're going to be the taxi licensing regulator for Atlanta or whatever. And they would punish people, or people didn't want to be there. They were doing something else. Now you have a whole generation of people who seek these jobs out, because when the apps came onto the scene and all of this innovation started, it got a lot of the younger students that were looking at careers to, and even lawyers. I've been chair of the Bar Association's Transportation Committee for 3 years. And it's amazing how when I joined the firm, we called it transportation law. I had 20,000 people calling me, "What is transportation law?" You have a lot of ties into Long Island. So one of the greatest compliments I ever got was when Senator Pothole, Al D'Amato, actually created as part of his lobbying group a transportation practice about 2 years after I did mine. Mm-hmm. So it made me think that, you know, I'm onto something. Yeah. No law firm has ever really gone out there outside of, you know, some Midwest firms that represent, you know, buses and trucks, a multimodal regulatory firm that does everything. So once they come and we get the licenses for them, advise them on legislation, whatever it is, we end up servicing all their legal needs. So for me, we kind of built something from scratch. And a lot of other people are now entering the field, which is exciting. You know, there are transportation lawyers out there. It is a thing. And, you know, law is a big part of it. You know, when you move something, you're dealing with the public safety element, you're dealing with policy, and there's rules and regulations, and the government's in the middle of all of it, right? So you Sure. really need lawyers out there that are skilled in this area. And it's great to see how it has evolved. And there's still a lot more work to do. We're just getting started. It's going to be another, you know, 20, 30, maybe even 50 years of a lot of change, I think.
So let's talk about government, because you mentioned government being involved, and Trump passed recently the big, beautiful bill that is going to offer mm-hmm. significant infrastructure investments. And I'm curious mm-hmm. how you see that impacting New York City and, you know, what's going to be coming as far as investments towards infrastructure and mm-hmm. mobility in the short term and long term.
It's a bit of a mixed bag. You know, the big, beautiful bill, and there's a great article we wrote, I think, last month on this in AM New York Legal. It's going to help drivers with respect to tips. You know, the overtime that they put into place, no tax on overtime and no tax on tips, that's not going to affect too many drivers, you know, because, you know, to get overtime, you need to be an employee. And the ride hail and the taxi business and the limo business, these are independent contractors. So they will benefit from the no tax on tips policy. You know, people who have jobs that pay a lot more are not going to benefit from that, you know, so you can deduct up to $25,000 in your tips. Mm-hmm. So it's not everything that people would thought it would be, you know, because of, I'm sure that there are a lot of people that weighed in Congress and with Trump when he put this out there. And I think a lot of people thought, oh yeah, we can earn unlimited tips and overtime and we don't have to pay. It wasn't that they put limits on it, right? Sure. But the overtime is not going to really affect people as much as the tips and the no tax on tips. And that could lead to fares going higher potentially, and it may not. It's really it really depends on what happens. You know, the TLC regulates the wages of drivers now. So I don't know how much it's going to have that much of an impact on passengers. It will hopefully help the drivers a little bit. and on the EV movement that has had a, will have a negative impact because they got rid of a lot of the EV credits. Some of the things that happened prompted Elon Musk to divorce Trump temporarily,
sure,
I guess.
Yeah.
But I'm not too worried about the EV movement, and I'll tell you why. Blue states and cities like New York are going to double down, and Governor Hochul and others, they're already finding ways to get money from state and localities to fill the gap. So I think if you're in California or New York, there's not going to be much of a difference. In certain rural parts of the country, there wasn't a lot of EV infrastructure being built anywhere. So it's kind of a mixed bag, you know, but there wasn't like new like transit funding in this. I suspect that some, you know, at some point Congress is going to have to go back and do an infrastructure spending bill at some point. And I'm sure they'll do that as time goes on.
So let's talk a little bit about the mayor's race, because, you know, it's a pretty highly contested race with three, you know, candidates involved, actually four, but I think three that are really, you know, being spoken of more. How do those candidates' policies differ when it comes to transportation?
Well, actually, they differ a lot, though I see Andrew Cuomo and Zohran Mamdani are starting to get closer together on their policy. Mayor Adams has done a tremendous amount in this area because he's got a record of doing things, and the governor does too. And from what I remember, he was pro-AV at the time. To his credit, Andrew Cuomo really is responsible for demystifying who controls the MTA. I mean, to his credit, whether people agree or disagree with what he did, he actually took control and ownership of things, which is refreshing to see. Mm-hmm. So like Andrew, like I worked on the LaGuardia reconstruction project as a consultant. I mean, people were afraid of being fired if they didn't end the construction on time. That was a novel thing that you didn't see too often. And he was out there saying, we're going to fix this. He did the same thing with the Summer of Hell when the Writers Alliance, for the first time, exposed back to the days of Robert Moses. The MTA was set up as a bait and switch to fire Robert Moses and create an unaccountable agency. With the Summer of Hell many years ago, that changed all that. And rather than hide from it, the governor took it on. He's changed his position on policies. He used to, you know, before congestion pricing, now he's not too keen on it. The mayor has been like pretty consistent. Eric Adams has actually accomplished a lot on Vision Zero, the investments that he and Commissioner Rodriguez have made at DOT in automated enforcement, in the bike lane expansion, in doubling down on Vision Zero. He, you know, they put $900 million into traffic safety. And it's my hope that we will achieve Vision Zero soon. Cities are achieving Vision Zero. Helsinki achieved Vision Zero. I believe a couple of cities in New Jersey and others.
What does that technically mean? No deaths over a period of what time?
1 more year without any fatalities.
A whole year. Wow. Yeah.
I mean, if you really think about it, that's a game changer. And they've done a lot of things with, like, he's got the Fifth Avenue redesign. He's got protected bike lanes. He's got the busway on 14th Street. Mm-hmm. So Adams has done a lot. You know, the big issue, obviously, is now free buses, right? So this is dominating the campaign. Actually, the last two mayoral elections, my university, I authored a report with a lot of people who helped peer review it. We even did a candidates forum back at the City University of New York two cycles ago. So we actually have a palm card and a report that comes out every mayoral election, which we're happy to preview and talk about in your paper, and we will make that available to voters. So we actually have not just a report with all the candidates' positions. Now we know who the candidates are. So I'm finishing up that report. It should be out in September.
Well, let me ask you a little question maybe that you can pull from the report. Is it possible?
Free buses?
Yes.
Yeah, it's definitely possible, but what are the impacts, right? Zohran Mamdani has been a big supporter of the medallion drivers and the taxi drivers, right? Is this going to affect them? How is it going to affect the intercity buses? Who's going to pay for it, right? And there's an argument to be made because I haven't seen any policy positions from the candidates out there yet on wheelchair accessibility and accessoride. If it was up to me, I would make that free first, honestly, and then work on looking at the bus issue. But I think who's going to pay for it is an open question.
Right. Well, that's the real question of it. Is it possible? How's it going to get paid for?
There seems to be support for it. And remember, the buses are accessible, but still, that's not going to solve the problem. People who are disabled need to get around with or without wheelchairs and point-to-point travel with accessoride. And that system needs to be fixed. So I would hope the candidates, before this is over, will address accessibility, but Cuomo's up on the bus too. He's calling for free subway and bus fares for households up to 150% of the federal poverty level. So Zohran wants it free for everybody. Andrew is looking to make it free for people who are of a certain income, low income standard. And he also wants mayoral control of transit. which is interesting. So Andrew wants control, as mayors may have alluded to. They put all this money into the MTA and they only have a couple of board seats. And he wants to boost subway safety enforcement as well, too. So it remains to be seen how Andrew Cuomo's positions are going to change and evolve from when he was governor. Zohar Mamdani only has a few issues that he's put out there. Some are not surprising. He supports congestion pricing. He supports and advocates for, you know, green school retrofits, resiliency hubs, density-focused housing. I could see the Mamdani administration, if he wins, talking a lot about transit-oriented development, and I could see him tying the housing to transit. So it's going to be interesting to see, but it's still a clean slate for him. He's only got a few policy issues out there. So I'm hoping he and Andrew Cuomo will come out with a transportation plan. We already know what Mayor Adams is doing. And also, you know, Curtis Sliwa has been at my mayoral forums in the past, you know, along with John Catsimatidis when he was running and Joe Lotus. So there's no shortage of ideas. I remember John Catsimatidis wanted to build a monorail and going through like Times Square. Like there's like some wild ideas out there, right? So,
well, it looks like IBX could be, you know, happening, right?
Well, yeah, it's happening. I mean, it's going to take a long time though. The money's already committed to that. And I met with the team and there's a lot of opinions on whether MTA should have handled it, but they're on track and they're building it out. And my biggest request to them is how are people going to get to that train? We need to make sure that we do more with mobility hubs. And I think all the candidates will probably end up supporting that. We need to focus on hubs where the first and the last mile could have easy transportation options and connections to drive people onto the subway system. So I'm hoping that the Bar Association, the people that are out there, my university, that once we get the report going and we have podcasts and forums before the election gets through, that once the election is said and done, all the groups should come out and ask the candidates, if you haven't spoken on certain issues on transportation, let's focus on X, Y, and Z. And I'm sure all the groups like Transportation Alternatives, Riders Alliance, the taxi and limo industry, everybody's going to be knocking at the door. But the bus issue seems to be the issue that's dominating the discussion all over the country, really. You know, and it'll be interesting to see what happens with the grocery stores because, you know, I'm not sure if the next proposal is going to be let's the city have an app for food deliveries from the city owned grocery stores. That's the next shoe I'm waiting to drop since this council has actually started as one of the first in the country regulating delivery workers' wages. You know, so I think there's going to be a lot more regulation coming. And I think if some of these candidates get in, I think the food delivery workers are probably going to get a lot of attention, just like the taxi drivers did when they had their crisis with the medallions years ago. So remains to be seen. But for the transportation community, for those who care about mobility, www.utrc2.org. We will be posting our report before the election. We're going to have a grassroots effort and hopefully, you know, we'll publish like one of our articles in AM New York talking about it with a big screenshot of the palm card, which you can take into the voting booth with you and look at side by side all the candidates' issues, even Curtis and Tim, the lawyer who's running as well, and make your decision if you care about mobility, looking at that palm card and voting with your feet.
So let's talk about the future. What does it look like in terms of transportation in New York City? What do you think would be realistic in terms of new forms of transportation?
Well, in terms of new forms of transportation, I've always been a big critic for many years that there's more happening on the West Coast than there is on the East Coast. And New York is kind of behind the times when it comes to innovation. And Mayor Adams actually has played a lot of catch up along with, you know, Andrew Kimmel from EDC and Commissioner Rodriguez from DOT. The downtown heliport project, which is huge, it's the first of its kind. So I think a lot of catch up was made by New York City when the mayor announced that we're going to have flying taxis from the downtown Manhattan heliport. We're going to have a sustainable e-cargo delivery hub where marine vessels are going to take cargo in to the pier. And there's going to be e-cargo bikes and e-bikes delivering goods in a sustainable way from there. I've had several panels that I've chaired with a lot of the decision makers. And the flying taxi thing is happening. Archer and Skyports are won the contract, they're developing the infrastructure, and it remains to be seen where these vehicles are going to go. However, I think it's a fair assumption that they're going to go to the airports. Blade, the helicopter service, was just purchased by Joby, which is a manufacturer of the flying vessels known as Advanced Air Mobility or UAM. They have four rotors. They're quiet, which should calm down the community boards that are complaining about helicopter noise for many, many years. And I think the big thing is it going to be affordable? That's the
Right.
big question
Sure,
mark. You know,
sure.
are these going to be trips to the Hamptons, or you need to get to the airport? And you can literally get to the airport in 5 minutes. I kid you not. You can get to the airport in 5 to 10 minutes. The problem is getting cross town in traffic for 40 minutes to get to the heliport. I suspect it'll probably go to the airports, and there's other use cases. And companies like Blade have done deliveries during the pandemic of organs. Like, I think the advanced air mobility could be used for evacuations. So we have automated vehicles, driverless cars, you know, the flying taxis, and mobility hub. And Manhattan downtown heliport, you could argue, is sort of like a mobility hub. It's multimodal. But what we really need to do, in my opinion, is we need to get mobility hubs in transportation deserts. Let's say the Staten Island Ferry. I did a project years ago, which unfortunately was scrapped 10 years after, even though it was successful, where we used to have, you know, a livery stand. I used to get complaints all the time as commissioner that there's all these illegal cabs that are picking people up. It's unsafe at night at the Staten Island side of the ferry. So EDC and TLC did an RFP, and we gave a concession to a couple of livery companies that had dispatcher on site. We should have mobility hub there. We should have car sharing that has EVs. We should have first and last mile connections with the ferry. And that the same goes for all the transportation deserts, the Bronx, parts of Coney Island. I think that's the future, and we haven't focused enough on that. And I'm hoping that whoever becomes mayor will work with the governor to make that a reality. I think the IBX project that you mentioned is a really good opportunity. Let's build out some of these hubs to get people to and from the light rail that's going to be operating from Brooklyn and Queens. It's going to take years to build, but we should be thinking about how people get there and maybe subsidizing that. You know, I think we're short-sighted because a lot of other cities have been doing this successfully. The Federal Transit Administration gave out millions, and smaller cities and transit agencies took the money, and it's a thing. Like Lyft and Uber and taxis are providing point-to-point wheelchair accessible service, and also first and last mile. You know, once you get off the bus, that last mile, you jump on an Uber or Lyft, and it takes you home for a small fare or no fare at all with the connection. And I think we need to think about the revenue that will come into the city and the increased ridership from the nurse that's working the graveyard shift from Coney Island, who doesn't want to be late for work and is taking an Uber, and can cut that price down by taking an Uber that's subsidized for a mile and jumping on the train. And so these are the type of things that keep me up at night, because I feel like we're not doing that. And I'm hoping that the mayoral candidates are listening to this. We hope they will take that into consideration.
Well, Matt, something tells me you could talk about transportation all day and all night. I could listen to it actually, because it's really interesting. And
I'm
I'm a
glad I
big
haven't put
believer.
you to sleep yet.
No, you haven't. Listen, I'm a big believer that, if you build it, they will come. Meaning, whenever there's subways, the development around all of those subway stations has really been quite significant. We call it over the last dozen years into Queens and Brooklyn and the Bronx, where there's been a lot more housing built, a lot more infrastructure, because people can get around easily. So I think that that's a key component to improving some of the communities that are underserved in New York City, because they don't have great transportation.
In our textbooks and in the transportation wonk community, we call that transit-oriented development. Vancouver and other cities are famous for that. You know, you don't really have to, take transportation to your job via car. You just, you can live, eat, work within walking distance or with access to transit. And like, the city is already built, right? Like, we're not building a city from scratch. It would be very easy to do this. You know, we have rights and rights of way, and it's kind of hard when you already have a city that's been around for hundreds of years. So that's why the mobility hubs make sense. Like, we need to understand that we may not be able to develop rail that goes to a housing complex in Staten Island or the Bronx, but we can build a mobility hub that will get people to the nearest subway. I think that's the new form of transit-oriented development that we need. And we call
Makes
them
sense.
mobility hubs, and they should have, EV infrastructure and charging there. I mean, the one thing I would ask that all, Mayor Adams has done a lot on this front, right? But we need to do more. There needs to be coordination with the governor and the mayor on EV charging infrastructure. It's a chicken and egg thing. And, as they build it out, we need to make sure that the charging stations are public and private, and that they are spaced out on a map. I would say that, whoever's elected mayor, they should sit down with the governor, and they should map out the city and actually engage with the parking garages and private sector to see where can we put EV charging stations that make sense, because that's the one thing that's held back this movement. The city and Keith Kerman and Commissioner Molina and DCAS and Eric Richardson, who's now working for my law firm, who used to work at DCAS, they've done so much with EVs and EV charging for the city. But you know, all the municipal fleet has the most number of electric vehicles. So the mayor's done a great job there. Now we need to get, as the taxi industry and Uber have already committed to making our EVs, the EV cars by a certain year, now we need to build the infrastructure. And the city and the private sector should be sharing an infrastructure. City-owned vehicles should be able to charge at private parking garages and vice versa. Uber drivers should be able to take a train into the city, pick up there from a parking lot, their Uber that's charging, and take the car around and not have to go over the bridge and create more traffic.
Well, listen, Matt, thank you so much for your insight. And I really appreciate your column that you provide AM New York once a month on transportation.
Welcome.
And it was a pleasure talking with you.
Same here. Thanks for having me, Josh.
Thank you. For anyone that likes the podcast, please hit the subscribe button. You'll be notified of each episode as they come out. You can check out the title and see if you're interested in listening. You can find us on all major podcast networks or, of course, at podcast.schnepsmedia.com.